name is Freya Högback, and I have been teaching the course Gender, Environment and Global Economics together with Albina Hipp now 2 times. The course has been for Åbo Akademi University, last time for Open University, and also for this course, apart from Gender, Environment and Global Economics in class, we also make podcasts to share the knowledge that the students have been learning and producing with everybody. And here we have 2 students that have prepared their podcasts. First is Alina Kandola. She has done her podcast about sustainability and circular economy in the fashion industry. And her podcast is based on an interview with Sini Ilmonen, and she's a circular economy specialist at Lounais-Suomen Jätehuolto. And her project is called Textiili 2.0. The other podcast is by Sorina Pinsari, and it's about a youth-led grassroots NGO called Ecovisio that is based in Moldova. And the project is called Torbesk, and it has been born through Ecovision Active Eco Program that started in 2015 by Ekaterina Tarus and Veronika Kasaku. And here are the podcasts. Please enjoy.
Everybody, you are listening to Alina, and in this episode I am going to talk to you about an alternative eco-economical practice with a feminist perspective. And we will learn about a project taking place here in Turku, the result of a cooperation between Lounais-Suomen Jätehuolto, aka Southwestern Finland Waste Disposal Center, and Turku AMK, which is the University of Applied Science in Turku. You will hear more about the project a bit later on, and it is about recycling of textiles, which hasn't even been possible that long ago. Yeah, welcome, and hopefully you'll enjoy this podcast. First, I want to share what I've learned and found interesting about eco-economical practices and what has inspired me to make this episode. So I've read a text named Making Feminist Media, and it was more like an interview where activists like Jessica Hoffman, Dara Judovsky, Sonja Eisman, Jana Krömer and Jenny discussed about, well, the name already says it, but making feminist media. And in the text, the interviewer asks, how can feminist media production challenge and intervene into this status quo and initiate and effect social change? Which strategies have you developed in your own projects to do so? And one of them replies, by representing alternative images of women, queers, and empowering readers to look at their surroundings critically and to take action themselves. But they also point out that they have to be realistic, because they are publishers of a feminist magazine first, not politicians, so the scope of our impact, they say, is somewhat limited by their job description. And I find this answer very good and interesting, because it made me think of so many things. Like many of us, regardless what we do, so it doesn't necessarily need to be linked to media or like, we can choose whether we support companies that show no diversity or take no action. Also, when we have the tools, we automatically become more aware of our surroundings and then also start thinking more critically. So if there is no media educating and presenting examples to us about alternative ways and alternative ways of just being a human, showing us how to be more critical, etc., how do we make any change? Well, to me, fashion industry is one of the most obvious examples. And sometimes to me it feels like the whole fashion industry or the clothing business wants women and non-binary to buy their clothes. Basically, all the rest but cis men. And I feel like we have to be up to date with what's trendy and buy trendy clothes for as little as 5 euros. And in advertisements, everything is targeted towards us. And even influencers on social media are trying to sell stuff that maybe they don't even themselves believe in. This leads to that we maybe get a bit mad and we don't want to buy this stuff, which is a good reaction. And then we go to, let's say, H&M, and we see a shirt that says feminist, and we know we stand for feminism, and we want to support this. And we buy this t-shirt to empower us. But what we do here is that we actually support a big company that uses cheap workforce in countries like Bangladesh, and this workforce usually consists of women. And their working conditions are poor, and living standards get even poorer thanks to all the chemicals that are thrown into the waters and rivers from all these factories that make fabrics and clothes. Let alone to mention the wages that they get that are almost non-existent. The act of buying a t-shirt that says feminist is in that way not helping women or promoting equality in any way, but it's also polluting the environment. And this then leads to people living around these rivers that are dependent on the water. They do not have access to clean water anymore. And another thing that I find very interesting is how our attention as consumers is important only until the moment we buy. So it is like the responsibility of big companies is non-existent when it comes to recycling the waste product. Wouldn't it be fair if we as consumers would get instructions at the time of purchase how to responsibly recycle the products we bought? And in my own experience, textiles aren't that easy to recycle. If you have garments or pieces of are still usable, you can give them to the Red Cross or Salvation Army or alike, but the problem arises when the clothes and fabrics aren't in usable condition anymore. I've had my favorite pair of jeans for as long as I can remember, and last summer they actually ripped quite badly, and I've tried to fix them several times, but now I think they won't serve me anymore. They won't serve the purpose as jeans anymore. And now I'm just wondering, should I be throwing them in the bin with all the other stuff, or should I be recycling? I was looking at all the maps at our recycling place outside our house, and I couldn't find anything about clothing, really. And this made me think of another text that I want to bring up in this podcast, which is Sarah Thomas's What is Participatory Learning and Action? So PLA, and this was an introduction to it. And Thomas is writing that PLA, which is Participatory Learning and Action, is an approach for learning about and engaging with communities. And it's a tool that combines an ever-growing toolkit of participatory and visual methods with natural interviewing techniques. And it is intended to facilitate a process of collective analysis and learning. So just some example of these participatory learning and action tools that we can use are maps and timelines and also transect walks, problem trees and just ranking activities. And something like a map that I was looking for and found at my recycling place didn't really tell me about how to recycle everything, so I think it was lacking something. And the role of these different tools are reserved such as that local people are seen as the experts when using them. So basically, you're handing over the pen to the community members themselves to do drawings and mappings and modeling and diagramming. This way we can, by listening and questioning, learn how to use different techniques and tools to, let's say, sustain our environment or do anything that helps us to make most of what we feel that is waste product, when it in fact still could be used. Or this is just an example of many things that could be used. But I think this PLA method is a great way to introduce new tools and methods to people, and it could be anywhere around the world. And that's what I find very fascinating about it. And I feel like we often tend to make things a lot more complicated than they are. I could see more of these brochures or maps that I've seen placed at our local recycling places. Textiles, and to date here in Turku there are only a few places where you can go and actually recycle your textiles, and sometimes these places are quite hard to find and they aren't that accessible. You should be driving quite far away or take the bus, and necessarily no bus goes there, and if you have a lot to carry with you, you won't go. So why not make these textile waste recycling places more accessible to all of us? At least I find it very alarming that Etelä-Suomen Sanomat, which is a newspaper, writes that we in Finland have annually 70 to 100 million kilograms of textile waste. And a lot of this so-called waste is still fully usable. And the EU has a so-called waste directive, and it states that textile waste should be recycled separately from all other waste by the year of 2025. However, they have not obligated how they should be organized. But luckily, there are people working on how to make the most of our leftover textiles. And now it is just time for us to recycle to support sustainability and enable circular economy. Well, maybe now it's easier said than done, but Turku AMK, which is the University of Applied Sciences here in Turku, and Lounais-Suomen Jäte, on the Waste Disposal Center's homepage, they write that according to a study by the Finnish Environment Institute, over 10 kilograms of waste is annually produced per capita. The number has been growing since the beginning of the 21st century. For now, there are no large-scale alternatives in Finland for textile material collection. And in the future, Southwest Finland aims to be a carbon-neutral region and lead the way to a circular economy. And it continues, the urban strategy of Turku aspires to carbon neutrality by 2040 and also to energy and resource efficiency in all activities. The end-of-life textile pilot is a part of a shared direction. So this all leads us to talk about a project called Tekstiili 2.0 that I already mentioned earlier. It is a cooperation between Lounais-Suomen Jätehuolto and Turun AMK, which is the University of Applied Sciences in Turku. I got to interview Sini Ilmonen, who is the circular economy specialist at Lounais-Suomen Jätehuolto Oy, about Tekstiili 2.0 project and a bit about the recycling of textiles. Ilmonen began by explaining to me how the project started and why it was needed. It was in 2015 when there had been discussions about how we in Finland do recycle but not textiles, even though we have a lot of textile waste annually, as it was already mentioned. However, a lot of the textiles that went to waste could still be used in many different ways before reaching the final stage, which is using it as energy, well, for heating, etc. They could be remade into new clothes or accessories, or used as filling material, and much more. They would just need to be collected and sorted in order for this to happen. Turku AMK, which is the University of Applied Science in Turku, was in the project, and students had research teams, and this was a great learning environment for the circular economy field, which all the students had in common. The project is still very topical today. As I mentioned earlier, the EU has a waste directive which states that textile waste should be recycled separately from year 2025. So, the project had started as Textili 2.0 and it has now grown to an even bigger one, the Telaketju network, that has had many smaller projects underneath it, and still a few are ongoing. On the LSJH homepages, they write this about the project. Previously, end-of-life textiles could barely be recycled because there was little information and few collections, sorted materials, product ideas, production plans, technologies, or markets. In order to be able to develop textile material recycling, the chain needs to include all of its parts. No operator can overcome the challenges of this alone, and so Telaketju was put together to help out. Telaketju originated as a group of follow-up projects from the Textile 2.0 project of the LSJH and the Turku University of Applied Sciences. With the help of the initial project, Telaketju grew into a nationwide cooperation network during 2016. Now the work continues with the support of numerous partners and several sub-projects. The sub-projects were distinguished from one another by naming them according to their main funders. And so we also discussed about how this project includes workers from many fields with Ilmonen. So the work is not only for those who sort the textiles, but also for people who work with technology development and people from many different industries. They are all needed to make this happen, as it was said in the text earlier. I asked Ilmonen about the gender dynamics involved in the work. And in different fields, they had people working in the team and sorting, and there is no bigger division in gender. However, Ilmonen points out that the work among textile tends to address more towards women, and men are harder to reach there. Ilmonen also highlights that the work of pre-sorting of textiles does not require any language skills, and is therefore a very easily accessible job. As we have learned from this, we see that many people from different fields are needed to make the textile recycling possible. And I now want to thank Sini Ilmonen for her input and expertise to this podcast. So we had a very interesting input there from Sini Ilmonen and the project Textili 2.0, which then also led to the project called Telaketju Network. And as I mentioned earlier, I had a few texts that I had as my inspiration for this podcast, and I now want to continue to talk about a few that I had in mind, and I really wanted to have them in this podcast as well. And we kind of touched upon the subject in the interview, but not really. I just briefly mentioned about how the gender division is at work there, and it seemed to be a very good one, 50-50 division there. But according to the Gender Gap in Environmental Attitudes, a System Justification Perspective text by Rachel E. Goldsmith from Rush University Medial Center, Irina Regina from New York University, and John T. Yost from New York University as well, in their text, they state that women also express higher levels of concern and perceptions of risk regarding environmental issues compared to men. And because I had read this text, I wanted to ask in the interview about this as well. So there might be some truth to the fact that maybe women tend to recycle textiles a bit more than men tend to do, and that women have this interest in textiles and working with textiles more than men have. And I'm really interested and up for any suggestions how to engage men in this question as well, because it really is an important one. Men do wear clothes and textiles as well in their everyday life. So if one half of the country does not really recycle their textiles, that is a huge loss, because as we learned, the textiles that are waste, or we would call them waste, can still be used in many ways. We can still get new items from them, and companies can use them as filling materials or just materials to build anything new, basically. And we have a lot of different brands that for many, many years already have used, for instance, seat belts from cars, etc. One of these is Globe Hope, that has made bags and reflectors and a lot more out of these recycled materials. So we really need to get everyone engaged in this, especially when the plan is to, as soon as possible, before 2025, be able to recycle clothes and textiles separately from the other waste that we have at home. And more about the gender gap in environmental attitudes, a system justification perspective texts, they also continue saying that these gender differences remained statically significant even after adjusting for environmental knowledge, religiosity and socialization. Women also report more concern about the effects of climate change than men, a difference that persists even after adjusting for employment status, parenthood, and being a full-time homemaker. And of course, we cannot now draw the conclusion that not a single cis man is responsible for their recycling, etc. But we could question why this is more common amongst cis men, and what we could do about this collectively to make a change. Or if there is some men out there that are outspoken and want to engage in this topic or already do, what would they tell their fellow male mates or other friends just of any gender that do not feel they are a part of this issue? How to make a change? Because in the end, it would benefit us all. And that is why I also want to talk a bit more about ecofeminism and what ecofeminism could mean. There are many meanings in the field of ecofeminism, but I want to highlight a few that I've read about and that Stephanie Lahar has mentioned in her text Ecofeminist Theory and Grassroots Politics. Inestra King says that ecofeminism is potentially a global movement that is founded on common interests yet celebrates diversity and opposes all forms of domination and violence. And Lahar also continues and says that an ecofeminist analysis includes the human exploitation of the non-human environment in its list of interwoven forms of oppression such as sexism and heterosexism, racism and ethnocentrism. So as we have learned in the course, the ones that usually suffer the most from environmental changes. When water dries out from lakes and rivers, who suffer from not being able to plant anything or from not finding food from the areas that you live around. The ones that are suffering the most are usually women. And then when we see different industries, not only fashion industries, but other as well, that take over areas where people have been living just to make profit and to take over their land, to be able to profit on them, on their behalf. This is a problem that goes beyond. And I want to read to you a text from an Instagram page called Fashion Revolution. And I think they sum up this whole topic quite well in this text that says, "The majority of the fashion industry still operates within colonized frameworks that have taken new forms of capitalistic structures. Large fashion houses operate just as colonizers by creating wealth through occupying space, taking resources, exploiting cultures, people, knowledge, and communities on various levels for their own disproportionate gains." So with this text and with this podcast, I would like to give you some new things to think about, maybe, and with the help of the project Textili 2.0 and the Telakka Network project, kind of just remind that the way we are going, it is the right way. We are going towards the right direction and something is happening. But in order for this to happen, we need many people to engage and we need more people to be aware of this and also just to know more about the fashion industry and what goes behind the scenes. It's low wages, it's unfair working conditions, long days, and also the people surrounding, living near these factories all around the world are suffering from them being near the chemicals and just people that are not taking responsibility of how to get rid of all these bad material that comes from the fashion industry. And that even though we think this is far away from us and we aren't really concerned about this, we should rethink and evaluate and be critical to think and in a feminist way kind of analyze what's been going on and what's still going on. That our choices have an impact and that if we choose wisely, we can use second-hand. We can ask our friends if they have something that we need. And if we then want to get rid of something like textiles, we do Google if we don't know about where to go with our waste products or how to maybe reuse the things. So it's a lot that we can do. It's not just something that's going on somewhere we don't know anything about, but the way we act as consumers, that also has a huge impact on what's going on. And it's a bit of a butterfly effect that goes on all the time. And I think there will be a change if our behaviors change. So the less we consume, the less we need to get rid of. And in the end, this is a better direction for a sustainable world for us all. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope that you have found this interesting, and if you have some comments, please contact and maybe I will get back to you again someday. You'll never know. Goodbye.
Good morning. My name is Sorina Pinzaru and I am an exchange student at Abu Academy University in Turku. One of the courses I attended here was Gender, Environment and Global Economics. And as final assignment, I had to work on an alternative eco-economical practice and the struggle for survival in the era of modern capitalism. My task was to find an existing project that could be a local cooperative or project or a grassroots association, and I have to apply my own understanding. After a long research from the many sources on the internet, I've decided to search something which is based in the country I was born, Moldova. And I found an interesting youth-led grassroots NGO, which is called Ecovisio, and I would like to talk about their amazing work, and in particular I will focus on a project called Torbesk. The methodology to collect the necessary information was to consult their website and to make an interview to Ekaterina Tsarush, one of the founders of the project that I would like to give you more details about. The work of NGO Ecovisio is focused on the gradual realization of full potential of the country and its neighborhood as a model region for sustainable development. They have very wide and connected areas on which they are working, such as education for sustainable development, peace and transformative leadership, social entrepreneurship and green economy, rural development and tourism, trees and organic agriculture, eco-construction, waste management and energy. To achieve all goals they've planned in such varied areas, they committed themselves in a very long list of initiatives and projects, where every member of the team is fully involved. They have 15 active members plus 100 of volunteers, women and men that help the organization to implement their projects. And every year, the number of members and partners is growing. They put high emphasis on cooperation with other actors of sustainable development in Moldova and abroad, such as environmental NGOs, educational institutions, ministers, both national and foreign embassies, companies and international organizations. The history of Ecovisio began in 1999, when it was born as the Ecological Association for Children and Youth in Moldova. Over time, as its audience became wider, the name was changed to Ecovisio, in order to reflect better the goals and activities of the organization. I would like to mention just a few important steps of the organization. In 1999, it was founded the Association for Children and Youth in Moldova. In 2013, the association is transformed and renamed to Ecovisio, and they started to launch programs such as Active Eco Sustainability in Action and Yarmar Eco. It's an yearly fair of ecological opportunities and social entrepreneurship in Moldova. And in 2015, the Torbesk project was started. Also, I would like to mention some partners that have been supported Ecovisio. They are national and international actors such as Sweden Embassy, US Embassy, UN Development Program in Moldova, and many others. In addition, they get support from donations, and every income taxpayer in Moldova can annually redirect 2% of his or her income tax to support the organization. It's a citizen's simplest way to support a cause they care about. Within this NGO, it was developed an innovative project called Turbesk, about which I would like to talk more into the details. This initiative in particular impressed me a lot because of its sustainable goals to solve the problems with which our society is struggling. The Torbesk initiative was started in 2015 through the Ecovisio Active Eco Program by two participants, Ekaterina Tseruš and Veronika Kazakov. The goal of this project is to reduce the amount of plastic bags used, to raise awareness on ecological issues among young people, and to promote responsible consumption and active citizenship in Moldova through roundtables for various stakeholders, seminars for youth, practical workshops, and a public campaign. The Torbesk project supports and promotes a healthier and a cleaner environment. We all know our planet is currently struggling with the climate change and overconsuming. So this project allows people who don't need any more certain clothes or materials to be transformed in a nice and comfortable reusable bags. The Torbesk team is always sewing bags from new materials which you prefer. They also work on environmental education of kids at schools and during summer camps, as well as teaching people to sew and how to personalize their eco bags during the various workshops they take. The initial idea was to sew bags using material or old clothes which cannot be used anymore. The principal goal of the project is to motivate consumers to reduce the number of plastic bags and to make the handmade reusable bag an indispensable, trendy object that they can be used in the everyday life. Also, another goal was to reduce the quantity of textiles which end to the landfill site, because at the moment in Moldova does not exist a solution for them. They cannot be recycled or composted successfully because of the lack of adequate conditions, similarly to the plastic bags case. This initiative is a clear example of an attempt to face capitalist conditions, putting efforts in the increment of production, not to get profits, but to protect the environment. And this is achieved by recycling and reusing, but also by reducing the consumption of new materials. Torbesk collects clothes, different kind of materials and banners in any state and which serve their purpose. They are carefully sorted out, and those which are still in a good condition and can be worn are sent to the free shop, where a new owner is waiting for it. Those clothes which do not fit well for the reusable bags are donated further for Ra Planet Project, which make colorful and amazing carpets from the recycled material. Torbesk makes sure nothing is going to be lost, and even from the smallest piece of fabric can be made smaller reusable bag. Also, the longer canvas strips are donated for bonding in the agricultural crops to people who take care of environment, such as Irina Pompus, who produce native ecological wools. As the demand for handmade bags made from pure cotton has increased, more people were needed to sew. In this case, the perfect solution was found by involving women socially excluded in sewing the handmade bags and earning some money. They work a couple of hours per day or week, as much as they are available to sew the reusable bags. At the moment, 3 women are part-timely involved. And here it comes into my mind what Zelezny and others argued about women found in the book The Gender Gap in Environmental Attitudes, a System of Justification Perspective. The women compared to men are more likely to take the perspective of others and to hold a stronger ethic of care. Across culture, women tend to be socialized to be more expressive, cooperative and caregiving than men, whereas men are socialized to be more competitive and independent than women. In this case, we can see how the women are involved in this project and how they care. This was possible thanks to the partnership with the NGO World in Love, which helps these families which have disabled children, in particular children affected by Down syndrome and autism. This project is happy to involve men also. They don't have a gender preference, although there is still lack of men. And I would like to quote Vandana Shiva in Nature and Women as Producer of Life, a book: with the violation of nature is linked the violation and marginalization of women. especially in the third world. Women produce and reproduce life, not merely biologically, but also through their social role in providing sustenance. As in this project, women contribute and involve themselves in providing their help to achieve the goal of the project, to recycle and reduce consumption. And at the same time, the project gives an opportunity to the most socially vulnerable women to participate and be involved in the project, but also to earn some money because they need them. And I think this exchange between the women and the project is the best goal achieved. As every initial project, at the beginning, may encounter some difficulties and challenges. Torbesk project, of course, wasn't exception. One of the toughest challenges is to survive in Moldova only with the money earned from selling the reusable bags. For this reason, all people that were or are still involved in the project another stable job. Another challenge is to find available people willing to get involved in the project and sew reusable bags. Although the initiative is open to everyone who wants to be involved, there is still a lack of personnel. At the moment, Torbesk, it's a small project, really at the beginning. The biggest part of the cost is covered by its activity, from the money earned by selling bags. In 2008, Torbesk has won a mini grant for buying a more powerful sewing machine and to be able also to recycle banners and to sew materials which are more resistant or rigid. This is very important when we speak about cycling. This mini grant was given by the organization Ecovisio, which encouraged this project from the beginning. The reusable bags can be ordered through the Facebook page of the project. By the beginning of 2017, Torbesk has participated at various fairs, including Yarmar Eco, Yard Sale, Sunday Fest, Civic Fest, expositions at Mold Expo, Gustar Music Festival, Maker Dies by Ateliers 99. Torbesk project has produced eco bags for different events, such as Yarm Eco, Climate Launchpad Moldova, Câștigăm când reciclăm national conferences. It has organized numerous workshops on swimming eco bags or personalizing them. It has promoted the idea on many TV shows and information website. It actively collaborates with other alumni. One of Active Eco 2015 alumni is decorating simple bags with astonishing paintings as a part-time job. This project provides educational session about the plastic problem and alternatives that everyone could use with children in summer camps or at schools. It has soon over 2,000 eco bags and backpacks, both from old clothes and new fabric. Also, Torbesk has collaborated with different important projects such as Evoroom 360, World in Love Organization, Green Up Mom, and Tineri Pentru Ecoplastic. As the main Ecovisio NGO team is becoming busier with its activities and programs, Torbesk project is now its representative in terms of promotion rational waste management in this and other areas as well. By wearing a Torbesk bag, you promote green behavior, take care of nature and of your loved ones, and say yes to a world without plastic. And of course, it makes you unique and special. Torbesk project makes a difference. In order to find out about this project or get an eco bag for yourself or for someone you care, visit Torbesk. You can find the page on Facebook. This kind of project, as many others nowadays, may bring the real ecological revolution. Concept of ecofeminism that was defined and described in many ways. According to Bestholm Macmillan, the term was coined in the 70s by the French author François Dobon, who really set up the project of ecofeminism as part of launching a new initiative called Ecology Feminism Center 1972. In 1974, she published her path-breaking book Feminism or Death. She used the word ecofeminism to refer to women's potential to bring out an ecological revolution. And as I described this project, how it works and what they do and the goals that they have, we can easily understand that there is a similarity. I think by doing this kind of projects and get involved in, we can make a change, which is really important nowadays. Being sustainable, it helps the environment, because nowadays we live during the climate change and some improvements have started to improve the environmental condition, but still it's a major problem, and most countries don't have any special treatment for the waste, such Moldova, and so they end up to landfills or the oceans. And it helps economically. Most companies are convinced that it has takes a lot of, even if most companies are convinced that it takes a lot of extra money to become sustainable. However, being sustainable will eventually help the business. The companies will become more efficient, will improve their brand value and reputation, and will provide a platform for innovation. They will help attract and retain staff, and will achieve better growth, will cut costs and strengthen the stakeholders' relation. Also will help the society, which has mainly the same concern with the businesses. The costs and the additional infrastructure and the effort to convince people to change behavior are some of the main reasons to avoid and postpone any programs of sustainable and progress. Over enough time, sustainable development will no longer be an option. It will be the only way available for cities and regional development. So it's a matter of time. The question is whether humans are going to make the transition toward sustainability on their own terms, or if they will be forced to make a rapid transition when all of the other options finally run out. And as a conclusion, there is no argument against sustainability, and sustainability development is cleaner, has the potential to be more efficient, has long-term potential, and it's the only way forward for a growing world economy.
Take me by the end, show me the way I can go. Take me by the end, show me the way.
The course Gender, Environment and Global Economics was a course that was done in 2019 in the fall. So these podcasts have been made then. And in the course, we examined the distinctions and discourses that are used to explain and understand gender-environment relations. And the course provided a diversity of feminist thought, focusing on the environment using a post-colonial ecofeminist interdisciplinary and intersectional approach and perspective. And the course explored gender within the global economy and how it affects local small-scale farmers, feminine, marginalized and racialized people in particular. And during the course we got familiar with concepts such as human-animal distinction, ecofeminist critique of the European so-called rationale, transboundary flows, international transfer of economy, waste, toxins, trade, ecological farming, and resistance. And the course examined also gender, race, and class vulnerabilities and how they are created in these practices and processes. And finally, the course also provides an examples of alternative economies and how these vulnerabilities are addressed through local grassroots political mobilization for a fair distribution of resources. And that's the course, how what it was about, more or less. And it was for the gender studies in Åbo Academy.
Show me the way I can go.
Tässä siis tämänkertainen totuusradio. Kiitos seurasta. Ja jottei hauskuus ihan vielä loppuisi, kuunnellaan vielä Kirkaa. No ei sentään. Matti Salokvartet ja Kites. Vuorillahan tässäkin ollaan. Ja näissä leijanaruissa lukee vapaus, toveruus ja vallankumous. Jos Friats ärsyttää, voit sulkea radion alun melodiaosuuden jälkeen. Hyvää yötä, ystävät!
Thank you.